once in a while. I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
Short and sweet with 42nd Street Pete. And here's your host, Pete Chiarella, only on Jackalope Radio.
We are live from beautiful downtown Kansas City, Missouri, and we got a special guest this week. Welcome my good buddy, Corey Alder, Ted B. Michaels' writing partner and director of the Incest Death Squad series. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Hey, Pete. I super appreciate it, man. I've been looking forward to getting on the show and talking to you for quite some time, so this is great. I'm glad this worked out. I appreciate you guys getting me on.
Yeah, it's long overdue. You know, it's just a weird weekend. You got that whole thing going on down in Kentucky that used to be Fright Night Film Festival. Now it's Fandom Fuck Fest or something like that, where they just, you know, got too many overpriced guests. And I said I was going to address this situation, and I will. I said it on Facebook that basically during a situation on Facebook with this piece of shit Jim O'Rear, this other piece of shit, a guy named Robert Warren, stepped up to the plate and actually asked me to come down to Fright Night Film Festival where he was going to beat the shit out of me. And he said on staff. Well, I emailed the promoters and I got back, well, this is a safe environment. Anybody can bring a family member here and there's never any problems and we don't know what you're talking about. Well, I'm glad you turned a blind eye to it because I had no intention of driving and wasting a tank of gas just to lock up with some hillbilly fuck and get ambushed by somebody. So you know something? Fuck Fright Night Film Fest. All they're doing is deleting comments on their Facebook page. Now, I saw there was like a 90-member thread going on conventions about this shit, but You know, we both know, you know, the bad side of this business, Corey. You know, you from, you know, being on the creative end of it, me from, you know, just being in you know, writing and being on the radio and at conventions in general. So we all know how screwed up shit gets, you know?
Oh, I mean, and for me, what's kind of happened is, because for me doing the movies, the kind of movies that I do, and doing them the way that I've done them, and I've got a lot of friends that are in the exact same boat, the best way for us to connect with like-minded people who are going to be interested in our movies, and people who, you know, who support independently made horror exploitation films, is to go to conventions like Cinema Wasteland, or to go to, I used to go to Crypticon in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul all the time. You used to go to Flashback Weekend, all of these things. The problem is, A, little guys like me, you're getting kind of priced out of stuff like that, but B, how am I supposed to compete when you're charging $85 for a picture with Gary Busey's teeth? I mean, I can't, you know, there's no money, there's no meat left on the bone for a guy like me. And especially, Pete, and you know this, I mean, if you go to one of those Walking Dead conventions, they're not looking to buy Incest, Death Squad, Astro Zombies 3, you know, Swamp Head, you know, any movies like anything, you know, so the independent stuff. They're not looking for that because they're there to buy you know, the fourth Jason's autograph, and that's about it. So, you know, there's so many of them, and the one thing that I will say is I didn't do great business at Cinema Wasteland, but as a fan, a genre fan, that was the best time I've had at a convention. So, I mean, for me, if you're a fan and you're a genre fan, Cinema Wasteland is the only one to go to. Just to watch 16mm prints of the Three Stooges, I can die a happy man.
Yeah, I know. It's like he's one of the few guys that keeps it real. He gives, you know, guys like you a shot to show your stuff there. I mean, I'm supplying for the prints this time around. I'm bringing in Mother Jugs and Speed, Hollywood Nights, Projected Man, and Barcaro. And Barcaro is a Lee Van Cleef film that's never even seen a DVD release in this country, so it's going to be interesting.
That's unbelievable. That's fantastic. And that's Cinema Wasteland, and of course, I think this next time, didn't you say it was something about a like a Hills Have Eyes reunion, which is very cool.
Yeah, they've got six of the original cast members together. Never been done before. You know, unfortunately, wow. Half the cast has passed away. That's the sad part. You know, John yeah. Steadman. You know, he played the old man. He died. I think the guy who played the cop, the older cop, he passed away. James Whitworth died at a very young age, I understand. He was in his 40s. He had a heart attack or something. So, you know, a lot of these guys aren't with us anymore. So, got Michael Berryman, Janice Blythe. Yeah, I'm trying to think who we got. Couldn't get Peter Locke. I think he's got Martin Spear, Michael Berryman, Dee Wallace, Janice Blythe, and Susan Rayner. And somebody else's name escapes me.
Oh, that's great.
But,
that's great. Michael Berryman is such a good guy, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Great to hang out with. Great, you know, great overall human being.
I'll never forget the first time I met Michael Berryman. I was working for, because I used to work for Charlie Band. I would do some conventions, and I'd do some press and PR for him. I did that for, I don't know, probably about 3 or 4 years or something like that. And Charles is a really great guy. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stories that go around about Charles, and I'm like, I can only go by, you know, my interactions with him, and I love the guy.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You know, and Michael Berryman comes up to me at one of the conventions, he goes, so you're here working for Charlie, huh? And I said, yeah. And he said, I hope you got paid in advance. I said, no,
it's
a big deal, you know. But I got to meet Michael Berryman. What a sweet, sweet man, very, very intelligent, well-spoken, wonderful guy, and I think has he been to Wasteland before? Is this his first?
This will be like his fourth or fifth time. He was in when we brought in Ruggiero Diodato for the Cannibal Holocaust
yeah.
thing. We had a couple yeah. guys, and he insisted that he really wanted Michael to be in, so we brought Michael in, and unfortunately, yeah. We lost Dave Hess right after that too. So
yeah, which was you know, kind of out of nowhere, and I actually had the opportunity, because I was doing a little blog talk radio show at the time called Astro Radio Z, which Derek Carey up here in Wisconsin has taken the reins on that one. He's doing that. I think this past week they had a Nightmare on Elm Street retrospective they were doing, but I was lucky enough to have David Hess on the show, and I don't even think once we mentioned Last House on the Left. We talked about music the entire time. It's just a sweet, sweet man.
Yeah, his career was he even said to his fans, he goes, don't make me make a choice, because if I have to make a choice, I'll go with yeah. the music rather than the acting. So he was like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, Todd was doing something with him too, putting his record out, I think, or something.
Yeah, we were working on it, and then everything kind of fell apart there.
And you know, that's another thing I get pissed about with these conventions, because, you know, like what you were saying, The Walking Dead, it's the flavor of the day. That's all it is.
Right.
And it's not
yeah,
attracting
that's all
horror
it is. And they can charge whatever they want.
Yeah. But, you know, guys like, you know, David would get swept aside, you know, our good buddy Ted Michaels, our buddy Gary Kent. You know, these guys don't, you know, get invited to conventions because they're swept, you know, in the background because, you know, these overpriced fucking babies, I call them, that they bring in, like Linda Blair, who pitches a bitch. And, you know, and then the other thing is, I don't know if you noticed, they're all getting $40 a signature now. So,
oh, absolutely. It's $40
hurting,
for a signature.
That's hurting
and then
everything
if you want
too.
A picture,
yeah.
Forget if you want a picture. It's another $40. I think I went to, what the hell was it called? It was in Cherry Hill. Was it Monster Mania? Is that the one out there?
Yeah, Monster Mania. Another place I'm not welcome at, but what the hell, you know?
Well, yeah. I went there for Charlie Band, and I went there with Greg Johnson, who's the star of my movies, and of course the star of Hole in the Wall, which is coming out in October. But I went out there with him, and it was his first real interaction with something like that. But he went up to talk to Gary Busey, and I think it was, I want to say it was $40 for him to sign something.
Yeah.
If you wanted a picture, it was another $50. So if you got a picture and something signed, it was $90. I go, $90 for what?
Well, the only way I'd do that, he would have to hold my cock, you know?
He'd have to do more to hold it.
Yeah, well, you know something? To put that on Facebook with him holding my cock, that'd be worth $50. It's like, you saw what I was carting around at the last Wasteland, you know, Merle Dixon's severed
hand. Yeah, the hand. Merle Dixon's severed hand, yeah.
Well, I actually sent it up to Motor City Nightmares, and Rooker signed it for $40.
Now you've got to charge $60 to get a picture with that hand.
Yeah, I'll tell you. If somebody wanted to give me $100 for it, I'd sell it. I'm not going to drag that to shows because it'll get beat up. I'll have to put in a stun hand or something now, you know?
Yeah, you're not going to want to know where that hand winds up taking it to conventions.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had the whole, I started the whole Merle Dixon Severed Hand fan page on Facebook.
I must have taken like, that.
Yeah. Did you take a, you took a picture with the hand, right?
No, I didn't get a chance.
No? Okay. Fuck. No, maybe next time. Yeah. Well, that's why I had all the Cinema Wasteland attendees holding and took pictures so I could set up a fan page. People cracked up, but yeah. And the funny part was the guy who I kept saying something that Scott Wilson's severed leg was giving me a hard time, and the guy representing Scott Wilson was sitting right behind us. So, yeah, he didn't say nothing, but yeah, it comes down to that. You know, here's a guy like, you take Scott Wilson. He's been acting since the 50s. Now they know him as the old man with one leg from The Walking Dead. That's the way you end out your career.
Right. And considering, isn't it funny?
Yeah, considering he was in Cold Blood, The New Centurions, The Ninth Configuration, which have you ever seen The Ninth Configuration?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, did that blow you away or what?
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, he's done a ton of shit, and it's like now he's just the old man from The Walking Dead that got his leg bit off, you know?
Exactly. How funny is that? I mean, and that's kind of what's happened, where it's almost, you know, that a lot of these guys who have been, think about Sid Haig. I mean, before House of a Thousand Corpses, before any of this stuff, Sid Haig would have been a guy that I would have given anything to get to talk to and meet. You know, and now, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, who's this Sid Haig character? He's Captain Spaulding. He's this, he's that. It's like, no way, man. Sid Haig, I mean, forget it, Big Birdcage. Just for that, in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that, you know.
I'll tell you something that happened, because I'm pretty cool with Sid. He was booked down at Saturday Nightmares a couple years ago in Jersey. And there was a bunch of bullshit going on. That movie, A Creature, came out, and people with them bought into the show, and they basically wanted to work Sid a different way. And he called me up, and he goes, this has to be straightened out. And I said, well, what would you like me to do? And he goes, I want to do what we were going to do. We're going to talk about my career 50 years in movies. And I said, fine, I'll call the promoter. I'll put him with you. You guys hash this out, which they did. So we did a really, really in-depth talk about his whole career. And we skirted, you know, the House of a Thousand Corpses, the Devil's Reject, for the obvious reason that everybody's sick and tired of hearing it. When we opened it up to the crowd, what was the first question? You going to do a sequel to Devil's Rejects?
Oh, Jesus.
Unfucking believable.
Yeah.
That you know, this guy is so much more than those two films and has done so, you know, come on, he worked with Lee Marvin three fucking times.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know,
done the work that he's been with Jack Hill and... You know, I mean, Spider Baby, just, you know, that movie, that was one that, you know, of my first favorite kind of, you know, underground cult-type movies that I had seen. I was like, what is this Spider Baby? And it was something that had floated around for years and years and years, and something you only heard in whispers, basically. And when I finally saw Spider Baby, I thought, unbelievable. I mean, this is my kind of movie. And Sid Haig was just, he didn't really say a word, but was remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And then Big Birdcage, forget it, he was great at that.
Yeah. Well, he even said how he read for that whole part with Spider Baby was he went down to the zoo and watched primates, and then he watched Little Kids.
Yeah.
And that's how he did the audition, because that's what they wanted, somebody childlike but savage.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Nice. Yeah, Sid's the best. You know, you and I, we've talked about this too. I mean, and it's something that I have a lot of frustration with is, you know, for me writing the movies for Ted, you know, and now being on the third one that he's now filming, you know, to just know that Ted has influenced an entire generation of young filmmakers who have, whether they know it or not, they've stolen from Ted, and for them to not celebrate and not even know how much Ted has done and how much they owe to Ted, you know, it I guess for lack of a better term, it aggravates me a little bit, you know, to know that.
Me Ted, too, because here's one of the few guys that's left from that golden age that's still fucking cranking out, you know, decent movies that you can watch, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, and he's taken a lot of care with the movies. I mean, if you think, when I first got to know Ted, he was coming off of, what the hell had he, oh, he had just done Heart of a Boy, which was probably, I think, even Ted, you know, would admit that it was his lowest selling movie. And it was kind of his attempt at doing kind of a heartwarming family film. But after that, that's when I got to know Ted, was right around that time when he had just put that out. And he had said, you know, oh, I want to make a horror film, and I want to do this, I want to do that. So in that time, Ted has done Demon Horror, he's done Astro Zombies M3, M4, and now he's preparing another movie. So, I mean, Ted is putting out brand new movies.
Yeah, plus the Corpse Grinders 3.
Every 18 months.
Yeah.
Corpse Grinders 3 is out now, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is,
he's working.
He stays on the cutting edge of stuff, as low budget as it is. You know, you'll talk to him, and he'll just blow your mind with his technical knowledge of this fucking camera he just bought, you know?
Oh, God almighty. He was so excited when he was talking about, because he said he wanted to do something paranormal. And I said, Ted, I said, the bottom line, because Ted doesn't watch movies. You know, you'll talk to Ted, and he'll say, you know, I know these paranormal movies are a hot thing right now.
Yeah.
And he'll say, you know, we should do something like that. And I said, Ted, bottom line is, and I told him this because I was writing the script for Paranormal Extreme Sport. I said, I've seen the first Paranormal Activity movie. I said, I saw it in the theater. It was what it was. I forgot it 5 seconds after I walked out. Above and beyond that, I haven't watched any of them. Ted said, I haven't seen any of them. I should probably watch them. And I said, no. I said, they're all kind of the found footage or the cameras in the corner, the security camera. You know, or it's this and that. I said, don't do that. I said, don't watch them. Because Ted doesn't watch movies ever. You know what I mean? Ted, I think what the hell was the last movie he said he went to? English Patient? I think in the theater was the last movie that Ted went to. And I just told him, I said, let's just write a paranormal movie like we would like to see it. You know?
Yeah.
And that's basically what we did. You know, and during the time that we were kind of going back and forth, Ted's like, oh, I have a Sony XP9 or such and so forth, little tiny camera, and I have tungsten, you know, or I have these little LED lights that are brighter than tungsten lights, and they're beautiful, and I can stick them in the corners and this and that. And he was like a kid in the candy store, you know. Ted's 80, I don't even know, what is Ted, 86 years old, 85, 86 years
87,
old.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get all this new equipment and a new way to make a movie and all these little things, he was so excited he could not wait to get shooting the movie. And now he's shooting the movie, he's using all this stuff, and, you know, he's having a great time.
Yeah, and, you know, he has this unbridled enthusiasm and passion for just doing the shit where, you know, these other schlumps, yeah, let's see if I can do it. And, you know, another guy who's coming, you know, trying to do something too is H.G. Lewis. He's trying to get some money to make another movie too.
Yeah, he's got Kickstarter and Indiegogo out now. What is it, Zombificator, I think is what it's called. It's an anthology.
Movie.
You know, for me, with HG, I mean, bottom line is, Debbie Michaels, Herschel Gordon Lewis, anything they put out, I'm on top of. I'm there. I'll pay money I'll walk to the end of the earth to see anything they put out. The Uh-Oh Show was great. That's HG's last one.
Yeah. Uh-Oh Show, yeah. He always wanted to do that. It's a shame Dave wasn't around to do it with him, you know?
I know. That documentary that Frank finished, the H.G. Lewis Godfather Gore from Something Weird, what a remarkable, beautiful documentary that is.
There's another one with just, it's pretty much just about Dave, and it's, I think it's called Mau Mau Sex or something like that, but it's, you know, it's like him and Dan Sony before Dan passed away. Yeah. That's a good one, too. Because he wanted to work with Dan. They formed a partnership. And I actually wish that Something Weird would actually put out, you know, his book that they were supposed to put out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Dave Friedman, what a guy. I mean, what a charmer. Yeah.
God. You ever meet him?
Yeah. No, never got a chance. I've met Herschel before.
Yeah, I was lucky enough because they had brought in Dave, you know, when Something Weird was doing Chiller Theater and stuff, and we'd struck up a friendship, and it wound up that I had worked for people that he knew, or I had run-ins with people he knew, and I worked for crooks that he knew, and he walked, the guy used to own Liquidators, Norman, walked by, and he goes, if that's a guy who deserved his legs broken, nobody else deserves his leg broken but this guy. And I'm like, Dave, I work with the guy, don't fucking kill him yet, you know? That's all, so... Oh yeah, but you know, Dave was old school because you know the whole thing with you know when Something Weird was putting out his stuff, and, you know, he found out about it, and he called him up, and it was basically, I got to send a couple leg breakers over there, and he goes, oh, Mr. Friedman, I'm so glad you got a hold of me. I really want to put out your movies, and that was the pivotal thing in the whole Something Weird deal where, you know, he turned legit when he did that because he had no choice because he did the right thing with Dave, and in doing the right thing, you know, with Dave and dealing from the top of the deck instead of the bottom, that opened more doors for him through Dave with other people like Harry Novak and, you know, those guys. So, you know, it all worked out, you know?
That was great. Yeah, I've always sung the praises of Something Weird, and I've said, you know, for a guy like me who was, you know, living in middle America, I was nowhere near a grindhouse or a flop. I mean, I had nothing. We had a drive-in movie theater that showed all the major stuff. You know, I never got to see anything cool. So the closest that I ever got, you know, to anything like that, and places where I saw movies that I had only heard about in whispers, like Blood Freak and, you know, even Blood Beast and things like that. You know, Something Weird was bringing all these movies back out, you know, because the one thing that that brought me the knowledge of grindhouse movies and, you know, kind of the fringe cinema stuff was the Incredibly Strange Film Show with Jonathan Groff. You know, what a remarkable, remarkable show. I used to watch that show like a mental patient, just over and over and over again. So you'd see the Ted B. Michaels episode and Herschel Gordon Lewis and John Waters and George Romero, and you'd just say, you know, Ray Dennis Steckler, and you'd watch them and go, oh my God, you know, the guys are more interesting, almost as interesting as the movies. And the Ted B. Michaels one, because it was funny that you mentioned that, that was where I became such a fan of Ted B. Michaels, was seeing that, because I had seen a few of his movies before that, you know, Corpse Grinders and Astro Zombies and things, but to see that and to see that this guy did these movies, you know, outside of the system, basically told the system to get bent, did his own thing, put out these incredible movies for so long, and still had this unbridled passion, even though the business itself had probably kicked his ass 100 times over and done him wrong. And of course, you know, we've all heard the story about Astro Zombies, where he worked on it for 18 months, and his partner, you know, basically, I don't know if it was the partner or the distribution company or something, stole it right up from under his nose. He never saw one dime from that movie.
Yeah, and I think Wayne Rogers from MASH co-wrote that or something with him.
It was something, was Astro Zombies. I know he was in on Astro Zombies.
Yeah. But see, that was the whole thing. Ted got fucked a lot with his films, and I get, you know, all of them. You know, you're dealing with these guys who had their own creative accounting system, and unfortunately, you might run into this too. And you self-distributing your DVDs, or you got them with a distributor?
No, I've gone all self-distribution, which has been, you know, a blessing and a curse. You know, in some ways, I own the movies at least. I can do whatever the hell I want with them. But it's really hard to, you know, get the information out there about the movies. You know, to say this and that, you know, I mean, I'm sending them out to every blogger and, you know, YouTube guy and you know, anything. And you just kind of send them out there and you go, okay, well, I've sent my my babies out there to either get completely decimated or somebody might like them and say something nice. But, I've been really terrified. And I think the place that comes from is probably about 7-8 years ago, I became really good friends with Bill Rebane, who lives in Wisconsin, lives northern Wisconsin, kind of a recluse.
Giant spider invasion,
Giant spider invasion, Ron, a Legend of Shadow Lake. I became really good friends with him, and throughout the time that I had a really close relationship with Bill, I thought, you know, I haven't talked to him in a while now, not because anything happened, but just because, you know, Bill's kind of working on his own plane, I guess is the best way to put it, and I find Bill exhausting sometimes, but I would always see Bill signing these terrible deals, you know, these awful distribution deals. And it scared me to death, you know, to sign distribution deals. So, no, I haven't signed any distribution deals. You know, and also talking to Ted and seeing what's happened there. You know, my mentors, who I've been very, very fortunate. I mean, I'm a lucky guy, you know, to know Herschel and to know Ted and to work with Ted. My God, unbelievable dream come true. You know, and Rebane and things, to learn from them, but to work with them as well, you know, is unbelievable. You know, and I've learned so much, either it's through their own mistakes with the negativity or through, you know, who they are and the way they approach things. I've been a lucky guy, you know, to learn from the best of the best, the guys that I loved when I was a kid. It's unbelievable. You know, I'm a very, very lucky guy to, you know, to know these guys and to have you know, not just a professional relationship, but a personal, you know, relationship where I can just call Ted up, you know, in the middle of the day and just talk nonsense, just talk a little shop. And, you know, that's a great thing. That's a young man's dream. It's a warped young man's dream come true, but it's a
young
man's dream.
Not really, because, you know, I had, you know, the same dream too. Unfortunately, I took different paths down the road, you know, before I got anywhere in this business. Not that I'm anywhere in this business. I got, you know, I do what I got to do, and that's it. But, you know, I can see Ted's influence all over your work too. So,
that's huge to me because, you know, that's the one thing everybody's always said. You know, I mean, you know, you always kind of get asked that question. You know, well, you know, what kind of movies do you want to make? And you know, sometimes you even get the weird question of, you know, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want to leave behind? And I said, I want people to look at what I've done, you know, with movies or with writing or, you know, art in any way, shape, or form, the same way that I look at Ted DeMichael's career. And I look at it and I say, here's a guy who did it his way, on his rules, the way he wanted to do it, when, how he wanted to do it, outside of a studio system. And the man made action movies, and he made horror and sci-fi and, I mean, family films, everything. Ted did whatever he wanted to do, whenever he wanted to do it. And that's what I want people to look at me and say the same thing.
Yeah, and what people don't know is that, you know, unbeknownst to them, Ted has jumped in and saved several films. Like, perfect example is Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. He came in, he wanted to see the
dailies.
Yeah, he came in when he saw the dailies. He goes, you people don't know how to light a scene. Let's do this over and I'll light the scene. And if he didn't jump in and, you know, become hands-on on that project, that would have never happened. They had to throw that footage away.
What's one thing you really, really stands out when I think about Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things? I think about the creepy, you know, kind of atmospheric lighting in the movie.
Right.
Ted DeMichael.
Yeah, exactly. Todd, you want to go another half hour, or what do you think?
I'll leave that up to you.
Think we can go another half hour, Corey?
Hey, I'm good. I'm just sitting out here on the lake. So.
Yeah, you're in the Ozarks somewhere or whatever, right?
Yeah, I'm on Lake of the Ozarks. I'm in Sunrise Beach, Missouri right now. Just got done doing some, well, I would call it fishing if I actually caught anything, but all I'm doing is I'm feeding the catfish that are about 15 feet from shore because I haven't caught anything. Kind of embarrassing, but...
Somebody says use chicken liver. They like that.
I've been using beef blood, and I thought that might be something that they would enjoy, but they do enjoy but they don't enjoy catching me.
Yeah, no, I was down with somebody, and they bought a pound of chicken livers, and I go, you hate that stuff. She goes, yeah, but I fish with it. I go, what do you catch? She goes, catfish. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I never thought of that.
No shit. I never even even thought of that. That would definitely be something to try, because I know I've got kind of like dough. It's kind of like beef blood soaked dough that I'm using for catfish right now, and it's, I mean, they love it, but I'm not able to hook any of them.
Yeah. So you can learn shit on this show. You can learn about movies, and you can learn fishing tips, too. Next, we'll have hillbilly hand fishing, plus movies.
Yeah, I'm thinking I just might go out there, you know, put my waders on and just reach under the water like Turtle Man and try to pull me up some dinner tonight.
You know, fuck that. I don't give a shit what anybody says. There's no way I'm sticking my hands in that water. I don't care.
No way.
When I was a kid, I used to do that shit, but you know something? There's some nasty shit crawling around down there, so I don't want to know nothing about it.
Well, they always talk about that worm.
I went to a reptile show Sunday. I actually saw a fucking 4-foot iguana minus the tail.
Yeah, no thanks. No, that's...
Yeah. They were in dog cages. That's how big they were.
Jim, Jesus Christ. That's not human. That's not from this earth. That's from another planet.
No, bearded dragons from another planet. Iguanas are from the tropics. I got bearded dragons. They develop personalities, and they try to control you and shit.
Are those some bitches that get on their back legs and run at you?
No, they if they get pissed off, they start bobbing their head, and under their chin turns dark black.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. They're not. The weird part is they're from Australia. They got here by accident. They don't import them. Somehow they got in, and they're so damn prolific, there's no reason to import them. So, and as far as, you know, me being, you know, a lizard guy, they're the best because they're just easy to maintain and they're friendly.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
As for iguanas, if you get a male iguana, it's going to try to kill you twice a year because when the mating season hits it, you're competition.
But that's a blast.
These fuckers were massive. I've never seen them this big. You know, if I didn't have a dog, I might have taken him up on it. But I mean, like, this is nuts, you know?
Yeah, no. Can you imagine that? Holy thing.
Yeah. We got to give a shout out to Annie Reardon out there too.
Definitely have to shout to Annie, who is to me one of the most important voices in horror. Because you know, like you and I talked, Pete. You know, and I said, you know, for me, I've been around the business for a long time. I started writing. I wrote for a company out of Costa Mesa, California. I want to say this was about 2000. Oh God. Three, something like that. So I was writing a couple of movies for them. So I've been in the business now for almost a decade, you know, around it in one way, shape, or form. Been making my own movies for almost 5.5 years now. And, you know, the horror scene, quote-unquote, if you want to call it the horror scene, and forget about an exploitation or a quote-unquote grindhouse scene, which I hate the fact that there's a lot of guys who don't have any point of reference that are using that term. I don't like the fact that anybody uses the term. Just make your movie. But in the entire scheme of things, Annie is very, very important in the world of horror, because you know she's somebody who I was talking to her a while back, and she said, I don't want people to read my writing. You can check her out. Brutalashell.com is the website where Annie does a lot of writing for. She said, I don't want people to read my column and go, okay, that's a tough chick in horror. She doesn't want people to even think of her as a chicken horror. She just wants people to think of her as a badass horror fan. And that's pretty huge, because, you know, we live in kind of a time now where there's a lot of image going on. They're selling more image than they are substance or right. Even passion. I mean, it's more about the glitz and the glamour. That's, you know, that's on a major scale. That's on a smaller scale. You look at Fangoria magazine. You've got Chris Alexander, who's making his own movies now. That's taken away from guys even like Herschel Gordon Lewis, Debbie Michaels. I'm not saying they're going to feature my shit in there, because they have no interest in me. But, you know, that's taken away from guys who are doing it. I know the guys from Rumorg magazine. They're doing their own movie, too. You know, there's a lot of shine and not a lot of substance that's going on in horror right now. And Annie, to me, is a breath of fresh air, as are you, Pete. You know, Pete? And Annie, and you know, some of the guys that I'm working with up here in Wisconsin, Derek Carey, John Pata. If anybody gets a chance to check out a movie called Deadweight from John Pata and Adam Bartlett, really amazing stuff. You know, I mean, it's at the end of the day, I guess you could call it a zombie movie, but it's a real human film. It's really amazing. If people get a chance, definitely check it out. I think the website is Carrying Deadweight. .com. But if you just Google Deadweight Horror Movie, you can check it out. There's a lot of really great stuff going on. You know, and you and of course Annie are very important voices and are to me the breath of fresh air, and I appreciate everything that she writes and everything she says.
Well, I appreciate you turning me on to her, because I needed, you know, when I did the magazine, which, you know, there's gonna be a second issue, you already sent me something in. It's probably gonna be coming out around the Wasteland time.
Perfect.
You know, she, you know, I needed a woman writer in there that knew her shit, and she really knows her shit, and she's got a great viewpoint. Plus, you know, like you say, and I see this too often, where these so-called horror chicks throw, like, half-naked pictures of themselves on Facebook and, you know, pop their top, oh, and that's fucking cool and shit. She don't need to do that, because she's got her shit together, she's hot where she don't have to take her clothes off, and she knows what the fuck she's talking about. So my hat's off to her, you know, and whatever. But, you know, she's good. I told her she should try to come out, you know, at the Wasteland.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my God, I've said, you know, 1,000 times that, I've told people, you know, independent filmmakers and things, and independent writers and all of this, I said, you know what, you know, the Cinema Wasteland is a perfect place to do it, I said, but, you know, for all of us to just be on the same side, I said, can you imagine the scar, you know, on the scene that we all could leave if we banded together and we did our own thing and we weren't fragmented and such like that? Because Annie, I mean, there's a girl that, you know, I'd follow into the bowels of hell, man. I'd be right behind her because I'd let her go first.
Yeah, and she probably would want to go first, you know? Yeah.
She's a lot tougher than I am.
Yeah, I know. She's got to get out of Rhode Island.
No, I love her to death, man. Just a breath of fresh air. I mean, and if you're lucky enough to be friends with her on Facebook, I look so forward to just seeing those status updates Every single day I go, oh man, you know, it just brings a smile to my face. I love her to death. She's the best. But, you know, that's the one thing I've been really, really lucky to have. It's, you know, but for me, it's been hard to kind of keep things in perspective. You know, to say, look at the people who I know. You know, the guys in Wisconsin who are making horror films and exploitation movies, we've got some great guys up here, man. You know, and we're doing this anthology called Hole in the Wall, which is coming out in October. And the plan right now is to premiere it at John Pattis Festival, the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival. I believe it's the first weekend in October. And basically, this anthology film was born out of all of us, the communal, you know, kind of feeling that we have as Wisconsin filmmakers, to get together and go, you know what, we love each other, we respect each other's movies, this is a good time, we're doing this for one reason and one reason only, it's because we, you know, we have a burning desire to do it, none of us are making any money off of this. We said, let's, you know, Derek, Carrie and I got together, we said, let's get people together, let's rally people behind it, let's do this anthology. And I'm telling you, I mean, I've seen what Derek has for the wraparound story. I did a short for it called, of all things, Ed Gein, DDS. So Ed Gein comes back to life as a dentist from an old dentist chair. It's the most ridiculously moronic short film you'll ever see. But John Hanusa's, you got something, you know, Eric Ars now, screaming like Banshees Productions. Also has something, Greg Johnson, who's in the Incest Death Squad movies. He shot about a 6-minute little short film that is completely berserk. I don't even know what to, I don't even know how to explain it. It's very reminiscent of early John Waters' work. It's very disgusting. The hole in the wall, you know, so we're all getting together. So I've been a lucky guy to, you know, to know so many great people. Pete, you, Annie, you know, and then to know Tandy Michaels, Herschel Gordon Lewis. You know, even George Romero. I've got to meet George Romero many, many, many times and talk to him. And he's a wonderful guy. Sid Haig.
I got to meet him once, and it was like, you know, he's got a manager, and it's all, you know, with the manager, it's all about money and shit. And I was complete. I think it was at Monster Mania. I was completely fucking hungover, shit faced, and the line was small, so I got in it, and I walked up and looked at the chick that's was handling the photos, and I go, just remember whose pot you smoked last night. She slides me the photo. Then I go up to the other one. She's collecting the $10, and I said, whose top shelf liquor did you drink last night? She just slid me the pass. I plopped down next to him and just started bullshitting him for like 20 minutes.
Oh, man, that's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah it was an experience.
You're a really good dude.
Yeah. But I'm not that – how far are you from Ohio or where I am? Are you 5 hours?
I'm from – well, my God, I can't even remember what it was. I want to say it's about 7.5.
Okay.
When we came down for Wasteland last time, my God, we left. No, dude, I think it's like 9 hours or something asinine like that.
Oh, fuck.
Because we left my house at, I mean, it was still dark out. It was April. So I think we left my house at like 6:30 in the morning. It was me and Derek Carey and Eric Osnow. And we went down and we were there. I mean, we were set up before the doors opened. So we were there about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I think it was pretty damn close to about 8 hours from there.
Wow.
That's a hell of a haul.
Yeah, I know. Because if you ever need me to do anything, I'm more than happy to do it, you know?
Yeah, we've got, I mean, there's stuff always going on up in Wisconsin that I didn't know. Rich Peterson, who does a lot of horror house stuff, but he's been a great guy in the Madison, Wisconsin area. For horror, he hosts the Madison Horror Film Festival every year, and I didn't know if he was going to do one this year, but supposedly he's doing one this year, man. It'd be great to have you cruise up here and you know, and do something for that, or Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, or you know, any of those. The thing is, up here, man, we don't have a lot of stuff going on in Wisconsin. We've got, you know, the Oshkosh Film Festival with John Tannen. We've got Rich Peterson's Madison Horror Film Festival, but other than that, it's all Chicago shit.
Yeah, I know. Flashback's in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, Flashback is... Well, no, wait, it's August. Well, I think it probably is. I forgot what day it was, but I think it's...
You hitting that one?
2 or 3 weeks away.
Yeah. You going to hit that one or no?
No, I used to go there all the time. I was there for Charlie Band a couple times. I've never gone there for myself, you know, for my own movies and stuff like that, because... You know, my problem with it is, it's, you know, I mean, it's $150 for a table, and I'm going to stay for 2 nights. You know, for me, I lose a lot of money going to them, so I got to kind of be strategic about, you know, going to conventions and stuff, and you know, which is unfortunate because, like, you know, like I said earlier in our conversation, you know, me going to these horror conventions, movie conventions, that's the best place for me to get, you know, word out with the movies, and I always sell fairly well, you know, and if nothing else, you know, you meet new people, and, you know, at Cinema Wasteland, holy mackerel, dude, I mean, I met unbelievable people, Tim Gross, who does Gross Movie Reviews, I got to meet Mario Dominic, you know, and got to see my buddy Fred Vogel, and got to see Bill Zabob, who's a genius, you know, so you get to meet new people and forge new relationships and stuff like that, too, at something like Wasteland. But Wasteland was, you know, for a fan experience, unbelievable, man. I was blown away.
Oh, yeah, and if you remember, we did a completely drunken live broadcast, too.
Yeah, we had Tom Sullivan on the show.
Yeah. We had...
Does that exist still?
Which one?
That show that we did, is that online somewhere?
Hey, Todd, that's an archive, right?
Yeah, it's in there.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I gotta listen to that, because we had a girl that was there.
Yeah, there was daughter of Ghoul, Mike Exler, me, you, a couple other drunks, you know?
Yeah, that was a crazy, crazy show. That was a great time.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tom Sullivan was a great guest, and it was timely, too, because the Evil Dead remake had just come out.
Yeah, well, Tom's always there. He never leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was like, I think he's been there since the first show.
Has he really? He's got a hell of, I mean, that museum that he sets up and puts together is phenomenal. And Tom is just a good dude.
Yeah. Oh, I got somebody's posting shit. It's got to be Annie. Wait a minute. Let me see what this says. I just saw like a, what the fuck is all this? Why am I getting all these weird, all of a sudden my page, I hate Facebook. It sucks. Let's see.
Aggravating, man.
Oh wait, if Doug Waltz is listening, yes, you can write for the magazine. Give me anything you feel like writing about, but I probably need it in like 2 weeks. And put a little something about The Hills Have Eyes, like your recollections of The Hills Have Eyes. And I'm on an ongoing thread like that. And you can IM me later if I'm not making any fucking sense. But let's see what else is here. Oh, Annie says she's not as cool as you guys are making me out to be. You can't live up to that.
Bullshit.
People. No, actually, you're not cool. You're pretty hot. You know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
You see, deal with that. You know?
Well, and not only that, I mean, Annie wants to sit there and say, I'm not as cool. I'm a guy who just took my wife and my 8-week-old daughter, and we're just sitting here basically fishing for 4 days. That's our major excitement. We just got the hell out of Dodge. And so now Dad smells like fish bait. And Mom and my daughter are sleeping, so that's as cool as I am. I just go and I escape to the woods and sit on the lake and stare at water for 4 days. So we're all pretty cool.
We're all yeah, what the hell? Cool. I just went down and bought meat today. That was my day.
Dude, I love going and buying meat. There's nothing better.
I mean, you know, people go, well, you know, somebody else had me on. What the fuck? Oh, more Movies hate us, and they go, what have you been doing since you've been off the air? I said, well, I planted 2 trees, put windows in, put a roof on my house. I'm getting so fucking domestic, it sucks, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Then I got my dog.
I mean, I found it now that, you know, because my daughter, she's 9 weeks on Monday, and I cocooned like ridiculous for about 6 weeks, and I'm still kind of cocooning with her now. I'm staying home, and my big excitement is going to Shopko and trying to find, because in Columbus, Wisconsin, where I live, beautiful Columbus, Wisconsin, small, tiny town, middle of nowhere, love it. We have a little Shopko in town, like a hometown store. It's basically kind of like a Palmyra. And I went there to go shopping for nylon shorts, because I was very excited to find some nylon shorts with pockets. But not only that, I was a bit more excited to find them on sale. So that's actually my big excitement now. Is that I found nylon shorts at our local Shopko on sale with pockets so that I can put poop bags when I walk the dog and we can have a great time.
Oh, yeah, don't get me going on poop bags. Oh, just in case all your listeners want to know, Annie just IM'd me that Corey should shut up. She's sitting there in her underwear and eating ice cream. Wow, that's a visual. Wow. Really? Is it a cone, Annie? Is it a cone?
You know what I think? You know what I say? I say pictures or it didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know what it is when you get up to my age, you got to take it as it comes, you know. So.
Oh, absolutely! Hey, man, yeah. I'm not that far behind you.
Oh, trust me, you don't want to be where I am. then we look at Ted, and Ted's like the fucking Energizer Bunny. Bap, 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 bap. God,
unbelievable! Yeah,
yeah.
Go, 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 go! I guarantee, with Ted, he'll have this movie shot in the next 4 months,
yeah.
And within 8 months, we'll be talking about the next movie again. Because that's what Ted does when he gets up in the morning. He's like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do today? He'll say, and he'll get on his trusty steed, as he calls it, his rascal scooter, and he'll go for his drive, but he will only be dreaming about the next movie. And I don't know. I mean, if anybody out there, any listeners are out there, go to Facebook. If you're on Facebook and just search Paranormal Extremes, text messages from the dead. And there is a Facebook page that is set up for the movie. And Ted has not lost his edge as far as casting with beautiful women is concerned. And I can't think of her name offhand. But he has a beautiful, beautiful young lady cast in the lead role of the film. And you can see her picture, and you can see pictures of the other cast and a few other things going on Facebook. But I did set up a Facebook page for Ted, and that is rolling right now. So you can go check it out and at least see the lead and give Ted your support through liking the page, because I know he'd like to see that.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be an interesting movie. A lot of people crap on some of this stuff, but I got to say, you know, with the budget he has, he's getting better with age, you know?
Oh, I said, you know, with Astro Zombies M3, when he and I, because the writing process between Teddy Michaels and me, I got to know Ted, and what had happened was I had just Googled Teddy Michaels. This was, God, I don't even remember how many years ago. This was right after Heart of a Boy, so whenever that was, I want to say it's like 7 years ago or something.
Well, am I getting queued? Todd, are you queuing me? Oops. I think he's ordering pizza. I thought he was queuing me. Gee. I think I got a message for you. Wait a minute. We should have had Annie on. It's like tell Corey no picks for you. Straight out of the cart with a spoon. Yeah, really. Wow, we could market
that. How about that for hijinks?
Yeah, really. That would just work as a trailer. That wouldn't have to have anything to do with the movie, you know?
No. It'd be perfect.
Tell Corey it's Kali Noke? Knoke? Whatever.
Kali Noke? Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever the... What the fuck is that?
Yeah, that's the lead in Paranormal Extremes.
Okay, I thought it was the ice cream she was eating.
Yeah. Peanut butter in it sounds pretty damn good, Annie.
I don't know. I've been to Rhode Island. I don't know. I've never heard of. I never ate any ice cream there. But matter of fact, why did I go to Rhode Island? I had something to do up there.
I know. Strange.
Yeah. I don't know. Funny thing too is I wrote this script treatment about 5 years ago. I just gave it to a friend of mine to look at because he did a really sleazy movie that he's like you. He gets it, you know. And
yeah, yeah. I appreciate.
And he's actually thinking it's going to work. He's talking to somebody. So who the hell knows?
Yeah.
Thing is though, I wrote one of the whack job part in there for me. I'm like one of the main bad guys, but I don't know if I can pull it off now. That was like 5 years ago.
Of course you can.
Oh, this is going to be one of those simplistic things where, you know, it's just, you know, it's a setup, a kill scene, then the revenge kill scenes, then the end, you know? So.
Right, right.
But I already, Toby Klein, Mr. Insanity?
Yeah.
Okay, he's going to be up the next Wasteland. We're going to do the Hardcore Wrestling Hour again together. I pitched some of it to him. I says, you know, they need three bad guys, and I said, you know, you're big and you can take those crazy bumps and make it look real. So, you know, it wouldn't be beyond the realm of possibility to have somebody who supposedly weighs 120 pounds throw you across a room, you know?
Right, yeah.
Because so, he could make
well,
it look
good. Well, that's a funny thing, too. I used to, because I worked on the radio, so I was a radio disc jockey for about 12 years of my life. I got in when I was 17 years old, and I was spinning, you know, country and western shit and top 40 music and hip hop and all this. But during that time, I got involved in pro wrestling too. So I did. I was a manager for about 4 years, and yeah, I took my bumps and took my chair shots and got thrown off the ring and hit with cookie sheets and all that stuff. So I have a real appreciation and respect for professional wrestling as well. That's one thing that I've never really talked about is the fact that I had a chance to be around the pro wrestling, and those guys are crazy, man. You know, they sacrifice.
Oh yeah, I got roped
as an independent filmmaker.
Yeah, I got roped into it too. I had no intention even in getting involved in this shit. Then shit just happened. But I never
it's
you know.
Crazy.
Worst thing that ever happened was Abdullah beat me up. That was about it. I was scared to fucking death.
If I saw Abdullah the Butcher coming anywhere near me, he'd elbows and assholes. I'd be gone so fast.
That's about where I was at. But he was okay. I haven't seen him. I think he's laid up or something. I think his hips finally went. But like every time I saw him after that at a convention, he'd look at me and laugh. You learn anything yet? Yeah. Not to do this shit.
Learned to stay the hell away from you.
Yeah, no, he, you know, actually, most of the guys that worked with him, except it's Puerto Rico and shit, most of the guys I've seen would shoot interviews said, you know, he was easy to work with. Of course, you're going to bleed. That's part of the fucking deal, you know?
Right, yeah. If you go into it knowing you're going to get a fork shoved in your forehead.
Fred, were you up there when Fred Olin Ray was up there? Because he worked with him.
No.
Fred used to wrestle.
Well, because Fred used to be, what was it, Fabulous Freddie Valentine? Or
Yeah.
So he worked Abby, but Abby's got like a barbecue joint somewhere now, doesn't he? Like in
he's always had a barbecue joint. Abdullah's House of Chinese Food and Ribs in Georgia somewhere.
Oh, yeah,
I think he's married to an Asian. He married an Asian woman. So,
oh, did he? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of that, you know, people don't know that, you know, that whole dojo thing that used to be on his tights in the old days, that was for real. He had a legit dojo thing or something, or martial arts background. So there's a movie I got. Oh, I have to fucking make you a copy. Roaring Fire. It's
I've never seen it.
You never seen it? Oh, I got the Chinese one. It's not edited and shit. I mean, he's still fat, but he was moving in this fucker, and he was doing some martial arts shit and kicks and stuff. Pretty cool shit. I'll have
no
to make
shit.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, please do, because, I mean, you kind of look at Abby and you go, he's, you know, that's why he's shoving forks in your head. The guy can't move. That's crazy.
Ah, back in the day, he knew he could move. There's some tapes, Ken probably has them, the Puerto Rican tapes, where all of a sudden he was working cologne and there was nobody watching the fucking ring and the crowd kept getting closer and closer and finally they had to battle their way out of the fucking arena. I mean, he wasn't fucking around. He was chopping these guys like crazy.
Oh, I bet. Just for his life, he's just trying to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. But there was one, somebody told me he sliced the guy up bad for real one time. I don't know. Who the fuck knows? Shit happens.
Oh,
you know,
well, you've
you heard
know
the stories.
Who knows what, I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about a lot of different guys. I mean, you know, Sabu was a guy that I always heard, you know, a lot of different stories about. Axel Rotten was another guy, you know, that I'd heard stories about. Steve Corino was even a guy, and I thought, Steve Corino, for Christ's sake. But, you know, all these guys, you know, I had worked shows with a lot of these guys. Sometimes I had done either managing or I was doing ring announcing or something, and I never saw any problem with any of these guys. The best guy I ever got to work with was Mad Dog and Butcher Gashon. So bad.
Old guys, yeah. Yeah. They were mainstays in your area out there, though.
Oh, yeah, they were up, they were at Burngania's AWA Twin Cities. I mean, those guys used to come through, you know, Chippewa Falls, and they'd come through La Crosse and Milwaukee and Wausau. And Mad Dog Bashan and Butcher Bashan, man, those were the guys. Jesse the Crusher. You know, I even remember when Hogan was coming through up in there with Vern.
Oh, yeah. It was funny, you know, you say Sabu, because this is sort of how I got sucked into the whole thing. Crowbar used to live one town over from me in Rutherford, I think. And they were doing a benefit for Sabu because he got hospitalized for like 6 months with no insurance. So,
oh, God.
I get in touch with him. It was weird. It was like right after the first of the year, that weekend or something. It was just on a weird day. So I got a hold of him. I want to buy a ticket. And he goes, well, we're having an auction too. And I go, do you ever do an auction? And he goes, no. I said, well, I have. You want me to do it? And he goes, yeah, sure. So I had a bunch of shit I didn't want. I go down there. Well, Sabu was actually there. And like I was bullshit with him for fucking 2 hours. And then, it was like kayfabe. He goes in the back. He ain't supposed to be there. And then, they did the show. I did the auction and shit. And what happened was he told me is he bought what I guess he thought were steroids down in Puerto Rico. And when he used them, he developed all these fucking tumors all through his body. So,
oh, no way.
Yeah, he was out for like 6 fucking months. So then, I ran into him on and off over the years. He's, he's a smoker too. So I always used to, flip him a joint here and there. And,
sure,
he was always cool with me. Just a shame. He just, beat the fuck out of himself and, never really got, his due where he should have got his due.
No. I mean, I think that they had that little tiny, 3 week ECW invasion when they were, ECW was trying to cross over into pay-per-view. So they came to one of the WWF events and Sabu got a couple of matches that way. But yeah, he never got, never got to do, but killed himself in a lot of high school gymnasiums and a lot of badass matches that a lot of people never saw except on bootleg day.
Yeah, and what a lot of people don't know is, his uncle, the Sheik, got him over in Japan. And up until the day the Sheik died, anytime Sabu worked in Japan, he sent his uncle back a piece of the action as a courtesy. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was like courtesy, that. Because the Sheik was the man in the Detroit area. I mean, hell, he crossed territories. He'd even come through, over by us. Over in Wisconsin, Twin Cities, Chicago. Oh, yeah. He was huge in Chicago, him and Fred Blassie and all those guys.
Yeah. Todd, how are we doing on time?
Yeah, I was just letting you know, it's about that time.
Oh, well, hey, we got to do this again, man. This was fun. Yeah, this was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? And just for listeners of 42nd Street Beats Grindhouse, if anybody goes to IncestDeathSquad.com and buys one of the movies after hearing the show, I'm going to throw in the other two for you. I'm going to give you the whole trilogy. So if you go there and you pick up one of the movies, I'll send all three of them to you. We'll sign them up and shoot them to you just because, I want to get the movies out there. And I think listeners of the Grindhouse will appreciate the movie. So it's IncestDeathSquad.com. Go buy one. I'll send you all the movies for nothing.
All right, man. We got to cut out. Again, great having you on. We'll have to do this again.
Absolutely, Pete. I appreciate it. God bless you guys. Take care. I appreciate it.
You too. Take care. Thanks, man.
You bet.
All right, well, that about wraps it up. Want to thank Corey again for coming on. We just stretched it out to a whole hour like the good old days. So, stay sick, and we'll see you then.
Short and sweet with 42nd Street Pete. Only on Jackalope Radio.